This is me telling you this. The program is Media Network.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archive. This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service.
Marks on Mechanics. Jonathan Marks investigates objects mechanical. In this first episode, the focus is on clocks.
Okay, I confess, clocks have always fascinated me. In fact, anything mechanical. And if you share that interest, then Europe is the place to be. Here in Holland, the 30th of April is Queen's Day. Each town and village has its open market, where people sell things they don't need anymore. If you're very lucky, then you may pick up an antique carriage clock or a Frisian timepiece for a bargain price. Of course, any local hardware store sells reproduction clocks that keep better time than the originals ever did. But a pendulum clock just isn't the same when you have to put a penlight battery into the plastic case on the back. I've been travelling round the Netherlands to see what's left of the Dutch clock industry and whether what I term real clock and watchmaking will survive into the next century. The answer is yes, but for reasons you might not expect. You can trace weight-driven mechanical clocks as far back as the 13th century. Those timepieces were designed to strike a bell once an hour. No one was too worried about minutes and hours in those days, and so a clock face wasn't deemed necessary. By the time a dial and hand were added to show the time of day, usually just the hour, the mechanism had been redesigned so that the alarm and striking chain became a subsidiary to timekeeping. In Utrecht, part of the museum van Speelklok tot Pyramid, literally translated from musical clock to street organ, well, part of that exhibition is devoted to the extremely ornate clocks of the 18th century. Clocks in church towers would play parts of folk songs each quarter of an hour, so clockmakers found a market for miniaturizing the mechanism for use in the home. The piano had arrived, so you see the development of clocks that played their tunes using small hammers hitting strings rather than bells. Imagine listening to something like this every hour, a top hit then from 1790. A tune from a dulcimer clock. Today such timepieces are confined to museums and specialist collectors. Few people want a wall clock that gives a 110-second performance every hour, drowning out the radio and television. And yet, in an age when we can easily make silent clocks that run on a battery, using a tiny piece of quartz as a reference, why is the market for mechanical clocks and watches still there at all? In fact, it turns out to be growing in some parts of the world. Almelo is a Dutch town right in the east of Holland, very close to the German border. As the express train pulls out of the station, leaving you on Almelo railway station, you can see one of Holland's remaining clock factories. I crossed the tracks and went into the Warming factory, a small family-owned business that's been around for 60 years, building on traditions that go back several centuries. Managing Director Eddie Warming took me round the factory. Actually, more a collection of workshops because each has its own character. Warming work with two kinds of clock parts. On the very expensive designs, they make everything from start to finish. The medium-priced clocks use movements that are made in the Black Forest area of Germany and various components that are made in small factories in the Almelo area. The first thing they do is to polish everything. Some of the parts from Germany are altered to fit the Dutch designs, and extra holes are drilled. The brass that drops below the drill is picked up by a tray and recycled. If it's pure, its second-hand value is the same as new. But they have to watch that no iron or lead gets into the brass filings, or it's worthless. Warmick has had to strike a balance between mass production and hand craftsmanship. Competition from Japan and other countries in the Far East means that four people now have to do the work of eight, and mechanisation has helped that. The sound of a machine designed to take a stick of brass and bend one end into a hook that will later hold a pendulum. Dials, weights, ornate figures and hands, everything is polished.
In the past we had about 8-9 men on the row. Now we do it with this machine and we just need half of the labour. But in the past we made it all by hand.
Yeah. How do you get that high gloss? Because, I mean, that's the problem with brass. After a while it goes, it tarnishes, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, and after we do it, varnish it. Because I don't have to brush it at home. In the past, the housewives had always once a week to polishing the brass, and now we give them a varnish and then you have no problems at all.
Right, now we're going upstairs.
The first floor of the factory contains the workshops that make the cases, and a lot of effort goes into getting a very high satin gloss on the cabinets.
We have a small factory in the neighbourhood of Almelo who are making our cases, the wood cases. And now we are in the spraying up department where we do the spraying and polishing of the clock cases.
What type of wood is used?
Walnut, oak, a new type, the MDF. It's a modern type of wood. And we use sometimes mahogany, but mostly oak and walnut.
The trick to getting the smooth, high gloss is simple. All the tiny cracks and imperfections are filled with a special resin. The surface is then sanded down and then sprayed with varnish. Then it's sanded again and any imperfections removed. In fact, it takes a total of 6 coats of varnish. 3 men make 50 cases a week. And then it was up another flight of stairs to the area of the factory where they hand-paint the dials.
Top floor?
Yeah, top floor.
Some customers specify a particular scene they want on the dial. Some even supply a photograph.
It's for checking out, adjusting the time.
And so to the room for final assembly. Some of the movements are checked for accuracy by comparing their tick against a sort of metronome.
It comes out, and if the line is straight, then the time is correct.
That means that the clock is actually running at the right speed?
Yes, but if I do... you see already that it makes
something wrong with the mechanism.
Yeah.
In the background, the radio played pop music. I noticed the guy doing final assembly on a Frisian start clock wasn't wearing a watch. I suppose he didn't need reminding what time it was. All the clocks end up in a quality control room next door, where they're left to run for 4 days continuously before they're packed in the box. Not surprisingly, the clocks are set at different times to avoid a chiming nightmare once every 30 minutes. Still, it was pretty noisy in there.
We have the Zaanse clock, we have the Frisian clock, but we have also the Twentse clock, we have the Drentse clock, clocks from Groningen, Amsterdam.
And how are they different? I mean, is it design?
Mostly design. Symbols are different. So, for instance, the Zaanse clock has a lot of brass on it, pear-shaped weights.
And standing in the showroom here, it seems to be that a lot of the symbols that you see on clocks are connected also with the sea.
Connected with the sea and also with religion. The symbols on the clock gives an idea what region the clocks come from. For instance, the parrot is known for a clock from Drenthe. The mermaids is more from the Frisian clocks. And then you have symbols as ears. And I think they come from Groningen.
In fact, one of the most expensive clocks that you produce, obviously one of the most selective clocks, because if you look inside, yes, you can see the mechanism, all of which has been polished. Obviously, these are going to be the antiques of the future, are they?
We sell them always. We say, you buy that clock now, but perhaps your grandchildren will make a quarrel about it's for me or for you.
In the past, Dutch clock and watchmakers were influenced by their colleagues in Britain, Germany and France. Repressive measures against the Protestants by Louis XIV of France led to an emigration of the influential Huguenot watchmakers to Amsterdam. Around 1715, entire sections of The Hague and Rotterdam were also populated by exiled French watchmakers and engravers. Meanwhile, there'd been another invention by Dutch mathematician and scientist Christian Huygens. At least, that's what I was taught at school in Britain. Right guy, but wrong pronunciation.
If I am correct, in about 1660, Christian Huygens invented the pendulum. And that is very important for the Dutch clockmakers.
And for everyone else. Galileo first noted that the movement of a swinging lamp in a cathedral in Pisa was constant compared to his pulse rate. Three quarters of a century later, Huygens invented a clock controlled by the motion of a pendulum, noting that it didn't matter how heavy the weight was on the end of the stick. The period for one oscillation back and forth was always the same. The period, though, is influenced by the position of the pendulum relative to Earth. Because the strength of the Earth's magnetic field is not uniform across the globe, a pendulum clock that's adjusted to work accurately here in Holland, just above sea level, will actually lose time if the clock is taken to a high mountain top in Switzerland and not readjusted. Temperature variations have also been the enemy of accurate timekeeping, and several pendulum designs have attempted to compensate for hot summers and cold winters.
They try to find out the composition in brass, for instance, then they use more strings to compensate with brass, with nickel, with iron, and they compensated it. A lot of people have thoughts about that, how they could prevent temperature would alter the time.
So what happens? I mean, I notice on even on the bottom of these clocks now, you've got a small adjustment screw. So if the clock gains, you can slow it down. Is that the way?
You can slow it down, or you can make it faster. It's always the opposite. If you bring up the pendulum, the clocks go faster, and if you bring down the pendulum, the clock goes slower.
In Europe, you can now buy watches and clocks that synchronize themselves to a radio clock. Just outside Frankfurt, Germany, is a giant antenna system which broadcasts atomic time continuously on 77.5 kHz long wave. In fact, I wear a watch which has an antenna in the leather strap and a digital readout which translates the special series of pulses into the exact time. It remains accurate to within millionths of a second, providing you stay within 1,500 kilometres of Frankfurt. Outside that area, it switches to a quartz backup mechanism. This sort of technology has had a major influence on traditional clockmaking. Take the humble cuckoo clock, for instance. That boom from southern Germany is over.
I think a lot of American soldiers who were in the Black Forest after the war, as they bought those clocks and took them home for their wives, and there was a big industry. Still is a good industry, but it's declining a little bit.
And it's not so much the accuracy then, because, I mean, if you've got a radio control clock, it's going to be more accurate than a pendulum clock.
Yes, yes.
It's the fact that, indeed, it moves, it ticks,
yes.
And it chimes the hour, too.
Yes, I think the people who buy the clocks with a mechanical movement, they like to have a very nice sound in their house from tick-tack and a nice bell and of a nice Westminster.
There seems to also be a link with England because of the names that you've given some of your clocks and also the names of the chimes, you know, Westminster chime and so forth, indicates that there must be an influence from the UK.
Yeah, I think in the past UK had a very good clockmaking industry, and very famous in England were the bracket clocks, and we still make the bracket clocks, and we now export them to Great Britain. They used a lot of movements with melody. For instance, with Westminster or triple chime, or with bell.
So what are you talking about in terms of the output from a factory like this? I mean, are you talking about thousands of clocks a week, or hundreds of clocks a week?
Or? No, 15,000 pieces a year.
And 50 of the 300 clocks they make a week are high-priced Frisian clocks, where all the parts are handmade. If budget's no problem, their highest-priced grandfather clock, which has a transparent case, is a mere $5,000.
Now I will give you another sound that will be the St. Michael on the same movement, but now we change the movement.
So you move a little lever. And you achieve that by having a sort of musical box idea. In other words, a cylinder with pins on it.
That's correct,
which you
yes.
can move.
Yeah, that's correct. So we can use, we can make a triple chime of it. The melody you can hear till 10 o'clock in the night, then it goes off automatically, and in the morning at 7 o'clock it starts again.
Most of the medium-priced clocks with German movements are between $600 and $1,000. The majority of them end up in Dutch homes, but they are exported to other countries in Europe, North America, and Japan. Ironic, because Japanese quartz clocks have had a devastating effect on the European industry.
Right, let's move to this clock, and it sounds a bit different.
Yes, wrong.
Something wrong with it.
The tick-tack is wrong. You hear it? There's a short tick and a long tack. So we say in the amplitude is not correct. If you hang the clock correct, horizontal and vertical, then you have a real tick-tack. I will let it hear. Now you have here the uneven tick-tack. And now I will adjust it. And now he's okay.
I'm sure there's no real connection, but you'll recall the warming company in Almelo are within a stone's throw of the railway line. So is the largest clock and watchmaker school in the Netherlands. Hoorn is a beautiful old town in the northwest of the Netherlands, about 25 kilometres north of Amsterdam.
Let's do this.
I arrived in time for coffee. Michael Kalf is manager of the watchmaker school in Hoorn, one of three in Holland, and the largest not only in the Netherlands, but in the world. 25 school leavers learn the watchmaker's trade each year. They pay $200 per annum to follow a four-year course. Obviously, then, there's a heavy subsidy from the state. The trade is specialised, but well-respected.
In Holland, we can say it's popular, because in Switzerland, for example, maybe some people think it's very popular in Switzerland, but in Holland, it's not too bad. We are the biggest school in the world.
We're standing in the first classroom here, whole rows of benches, lathes on the side of the room, and clocks on the wall. So what happens here in the first year?
They are making their own clock, and it's the beginning of watchmaking. To learn with the handlings with a file and a drill, etc., etc.
And then gradually, I suppose, things get smaller and smaller.
Yes. First you start with, what we say, big parts, and later it's smaller and smaller. And when they are in the final class, in the first place, in the first week when they start, they say, well, it's very, very small clocks. But 1 month later, they ask me, please, do you have something smaller for me? Because it gives the right feeling to do it smaller and smaller, and that's the challenge.
There's a lot to learn, because antique mechanical watches come in many designs, and the escapement systems vary enormously.
Oh yes, there are, hundreds of escapements. Well, everybody who thought was important in the last few centuries, they must make their own inventions about escapements. But now you can say we have five or six, that's it. And for mechanical watches, you have only one system, and that's the Swiss escapement.
To what extent are the Swiss important then in the watchmaking industry? You say that in terms of training now, they're not.
No, that's one of the biggest problems in Switzerland. 10,000 of people who are working in the watchmaker industry in the past 10 years, they are now unemployed. And they have to find another job. So you can see that the image is not very good. But in Holland, you can say the image is not too bad.
So how is the market changing then? I mean, obviously you had the influence of quartz watches, which have come in very cheap, and in many cases you just throw them away when they go wrong.
Well, one of the problems is that a lot of people in the world are thinking that quartz watches are cheap. In the first place, you can say yes, because that was the first part of the digital watches with LCD. But at the moment, you can say that quartz watches are not longer so cheap. If you see the Swatch watches, who are the most popular watches, they are not real cheap. They are popular, but not cheap. And people in the world are thinking that quartz watches are not repairable. And that's a very misunderstanding, because quartz watches, you can repair quartz watches, absolutely.
Now, that's the lower end of the market, is it? I mean, what about the more expensive watches? Are they still popular? There's still a big market for them?
Yes, it's growing, absolutely. Mechanical watches, the market for mechanical watches are growing. You can see that, for example, the very, very special watches of Patek Philippe and Rolex, for example, Longines, Audemars Piguet, etc., etc. They are very, very, very popular.
And what about the big clocks?
You mean the wall clocks? Well, that's the most wall clocks are coming from Japan.
So after coming out of the school 4 years later, you know a lot about watchmaking, you know a lot about also the wall clocks. Yes. So what do you do next?
Well, some people are starting a shop. To run a shop, you can do that. You can sell watches or clocks, but you can repair watches or both.
On the other hand, though, is there much money in repairing watches and clocks?
Oh, yes. Of course you can make money. But, it depends what kind of watches are you repairing. Are you always changing batteries? Well, that's not a big business, but it's a normal job. If you work on a normal way, you can make money. After-sales service is always important for every business.
Now, if I were to walk into a shop to say that I did have a Patek Philippe watch, I can imagine that people would say, well, you know, do I have all the parts?
One of the problems, what you need is a lot of knowledge about the clocks and the watches. And if you are doing, something stupid with a very expensive watch, well, then you have a disaster, of course. And that's the reason that you need the knowledge to do the right things. If it is a very special watch, well, please send it to the factory.
There is support from the industry, of course. Every few years, a number of watchmakers in Holland are invited to a special school in Switzerland to bring them up to date on new techniques. The genius behind the Swatch concept is simple. If you change your shirt or dress, why not change your watch? So began a huge marketing campaign for fashion watches, a concept which saved the European watchmaking industry. And cheap quartz watches are a useful tool in promotional activities.
If you want to sell your BMW, well, you give the customer a watch with BMW on the dial. And that kind of watches they are making in the south of Holland. But, that's it.
The economy being what it is, I wasn't surprised to discover the watchmaker school has been forced to cut back. And in this case, they'll have to move.
They give us the order to make a school together with the goldsmith school in Amsterdam. And then, in our opinion, it is very sorry, but it's one of the orders of the government.
So how old is the school?
The school start in 48. Personal initiative from people who are living here in this district of Holland.
Is it more the artistic side rather than actually the timekeeping? Because in many cases you can buy a watch, a quartz watch, for let's say $5 now, which keeps better time than a mechanical watch of let's say $1,000.
That's right, but on watches there is always something emotional. If someone gives you it for your birthday, and there is an inscription in the backside. Well, it's a part of you. It gives you something very special. That's now, and that's forever.
And that's why, with the emotional link, it's important that if you're repairing somebody else's watch, yes, that you get it right.
Yes, that's right.
Mind you, there is a problem with the importation of fake imitation watches. Stroll the markets in Bangkok, Thailand, or in Hong Kong, and someone will probably offer you a Rolex or a Cartier. Few pretend that these fakes are genuine. It's just a bit of fun. But not for the real watchmakers, though. Not long back, Cartier took a steamroller and publicly pulverized a whole load of fake watches right into the tarmac.
You can see it in clothes, and especially in watches. People, they want the same image with, something cheap.
So how do people like Rolex and Cartier stop this? I mean, what are they doing? Are there any campaigns, or
yes,
do they just watch
yes,
it?
Yes, they are trying to stop it with processes. And, it is a fight, and it still goes on.
If I were to walk into a shop with a fake Rolex, would you repair it?
The most people say no. But, well, it depends. Sometimes the watch is not bad, but it is a fake. If it is real rubbish, well, stop it, because it costs you time and it gives you nothing.
So what watch are you wearing?
This is a Heuer chronograph. It's built in 71. And, well, what you can see on the dial is the date indication by hand. And you can see a second counter, a minute counter, an hour counter, and the indication for the day and the month.
Looks like you hate digital watches.
No. It's very popular for collectors, you know.
And so ends the first part of this exploration of things mechanical. But there's more to come as the series continues, as we explore the world of pianolas, musical boxes, and next time, bells in the belfry.
Marks on Mechanics was produced and presented by Jonathan Marks for Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.